All righty. Do you got any plans for Labor Day?
Well, I think
no.
We
I have some construction going on out here in my house. If you're asking me, so I'm. I just told those
guys
out the window, be quiet.
Okay, I think we are live. For whatever reason, the audio didn't go. So welcome, everybody. Drive-through HR. We are talking about HR every day. It's Brian, William, and Nisha. And we want to get to our guest because he's going to demystify some things that have, they're age-old questions here. So we'll get that done. So, Scott Powell, welcome to Drive Your HR.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here today, and I appreciate the time to spend together.
Well, and we'll kick it off, if you would, just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll jump into kind of what's top of mind from there.
All right. Thanks. I've spent probably best way to describe it is certainly for those who know me, I come from kind of the sales bent or the profession side of the business. So I'm certainly not within the discipline, but working with HR, talent acquisition, and those associated leaders all the time, but certainly from more of a solution provider orientation. So the last, 15 years, I've been really within the human capital space with early days kind of career builder and job boarding, sourcing, Taleo along with, you know, applicant tracking and kind of early processing success factors with talent management, and then most recently with a company called HireVue, and obviously, you know, delving into video evaluation tools, and then most recently, go forward here, current day is Smashfly Technologies. So that's a lot of where my kind of perspective comes from in terms of working with folks that are out trying to solve business problems and save time, save money, and improve the quality experience for people.
And Scott, what's top of mind for you these days? What's occupying a lot of your kind of your intellect these days?
Great question. I think, you know, probably not unlike everybody else, you make a career change. And I typically, when I look back, I had an individual 15 years ago who was really kind of a mentor, and I was out pushing or selling services and special kind of solutions around, you know, technology, strictly technology, and spending time with CIOs and so forth for, again, dare I date myself here, but, you know, mainframe recovery. Server farm recovery, people recovery, and all that. And I had a mentor of mine say, hey, you probably ought to jump into the HR space. Like, that's just where technology is going. It's kind of a group that hasn't been served real well, and certainly they're going to have needs going forward. And so I think, you know, one thing I've always tried to do is kind of look at innovation ways, probably second, but first look at the business problem at hand that's within the business or within a particular discipline. So what's really at top of mind for me these days is, I think after making a career shift just recently over to Smashfly Technologies, is probably looking at, you know, what is a recruitment marketing platform? How does that kind of fit with the last 15 years of technological innovations that discipline leaders have had to kind of look at, investigate, grapple with, figure out how they'll use, and certainly set up and configure, and then try to drive business value out of that, you know, sort of decision set or investment. So top of mind is certainly the recruitment marketing space for me, and where that technology or that offering's going, that's for sure. So
nice. What in your 15 years dealing with these types of buyers, the CHROs, the chief talent acquisition officers and folks like that, what's changed in their world? Like, what are their expectations, and like how you've interacted with them maybe 15 years ago versus how you interact with folks now? How is
sure.
that similar and or how is that different?
Yeah. Great question. I think in the early years, so I'm going to go back kind of in, you know, right at 2000, 2001 with the advent of everybody kind of saying, hey, you know, job boards are certainly here. It's producing a lot of volume for me. And I was with Taleo at the time. I think what has changed is, or actually, let me go back to that point in time. The HR folks, and certainly when you mentioned a chief human resource officer, they were strongly kind of led, influenced, and guided or directed by the IT group. And so those solutions that had yet to really be kind of built into a SaaS platform were kind of governing and ruling the world at that day. And I think, you know, any kind of breakout decision mindset to move over to a SaaS-type platform, whether it's for applicant tracking or anything else, was, you know, strongly kind of governed or ruled in terms of the diligence and how that decision got made versus, you know, other investments an organization had made for, you know, a large ERP, what have you. And so, you know, that was always filled with a lot of, you know, consternation in terms of who's going to make the final decision, what's the best platform from either an IT sense or from a, you know, something as soft as again, a candidate experience or a brand employment brand promotion and feature functionality for the user group, all of that. Today, what I see is that's really changed, where I think HR has really kind of been just a bastion of, like, technology that's been thrown at it, and now they're certainly in a position to go out, and it's kind of required that they're continually kind of educated and almost all-knowing, right, like what's out there and what's possible, because I think with this latest kind of advent of, you know, what I kind of nickname either, you know, Web 3.0 or HCM 3.0, it's a requirement to remain current and be progressive and an innovator in thought, kind of deciding what's next for your organization, what business problem it solves, and so on. So that's probably the shift I've seen over the last 15 years.
What's your sales coda? What's you know, every great sales leader that I've ever been around kind of has some rules for selling and for interacting with folks and closing deals and whatnot. What's if you're kind of to demystify that for yourself, what are your rules?
Yeah, good question. I think it when you're working with and again, I'll say HR, but that's certainly inclusive of, you know, at least my experience is talent acquisition. It's folks in compensation, performance, succession. So really the full gamut of, you know, kind of like processes that require support. I think first and foremost, this will sound a little bit, you know, canned, but it's really about the relationships. In that, I think specifically working with HR today, they're thrown a lot of fires. They're thrown a lot of situations that were unpredictable, unexpected. And so I think it's really important to first earn the right to have a discussion and to move into a little bit of a one-on-one of what is your business? What are your current kind of objectives? What are you trying to solve? I mean, what's in it for your team, your employment brand, and certainly what's in it for your senior leaders? What are they asking you to do? And I think that first starts with a relationship that gives you the right to have those discussions and to move at a pace or a cadence that is appropriate, because I'm probably a big believer that without that, I don't think you're going to drive to any of the deep-rooted issues or business problems that exist and probably have an opportunity to solve those. So I'll say it starts with relationships. Hopefully a relationship in short order turns to trust and an open exchange, and that certainly can lead to kind of exposures and messaging or campaigning internally for what a particular service or offering can bring. And, you know, I think everybody has to vote from there. It doesn't, you know, there's no sales coda that says you're going to get a relationship to convert and be, you know, again, a partnership. But I think if it doesn't start there, it's probably flawed, because in this space it's small and people certainly move around, whether that's on my side of the business from a service provider or from a leader or a domain type person, right? There's always movement.
Right.
You moved in other roles, so.
It's funny, when I've run sales in the past and I've hired salespeople to work with me, I've had three rules. You know, first is listen first, speak second, rule number one. You know, rule number two, tell the truth. I don't care what you do, just tell them the truth. It's not going to get us a deal. Well, you know, whatever, tell the truth. Always tell the truth. And the third is tell them and really back it up. You want to sell to them for the rest of your life. And if you listen first, you speak second, and if you tell the truth, you have a high degree of chances that you will get to sell them for the rest of your life. And,
yeah.
You know, I think from a – you manage a lot of talent. What's funny is being a sales leader, you've managed a ton of you know, guys and gals in their career. What do you look for when you're hiring, you know, an inside salesperson or an outside salesperson? Like, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a mini you that did 20 years ago, or what are you looking for when you hire?
I don't know if Mini Me is ever a good concept for me, but I'll certainly answer the question. I really try to, I mean, with all the, I think there are some common elements to selling today, but, you know, first and foremost, I mean, those are kind of requirements, right? I think you have to have a will to win and certainly some drive and ambition and be a great communicator. So I'll leave those out. I think first, for me, it's all about intellectual curiosity. I think that's just a great way to start relationships, because if you really aren't, moreover, a curious person about information, people, and situations, and kind of looking for ways in which thought leadership offerings and intelligence that you gather through trust with individuals, if without intellectual curiosity, I don't think you ever arrive at something more than just being a supplier and probably in a relationship that's certainly mitigated. So I say intellectual curiosity is number one. I think people, number two, that always interest me from a hire and kind of manage and work on my teams is people that are creative. I mean, there's really nothing today that says this one solution is the silver bullet. It's, you know, it cures the common cold. And I think many times you have to kind of look outside the box and outside the box of your own service or your own offering and look really inside the relationship you have, the exchange, the data you've gathered. And I think both of those elements, intellectual curiosity, creativity, probably breed some of the best outcomes today in the marketplace when, you know, companies and suppliers or service providers are trying to work together. No question.
Nice. And we're trying to demystify some things about sales executives and what is your least favorite, peering into your world, what's your kind of your least favorite sales activity and your favorite type of sales activity? And
okay.
Of course I'm thinking about conferences as I'm thinking about this question, but really inside your world is a tapestry of activities. When it gets right down to it, some of these are really fun for you and you like them, and then some of them not so much.
Yeah, I think for those that either might be listening or those that will hear this, I know there's going to be some belly laughs going off somewhere, but I'll be super, super honest about this. I probably, my least favorite thing around any kind of sales leadership and sales arena is probably it's become a very data-driven business. So, I mean, I think today you have to look at data and you have to gather data sets that you just probably didn't have to pay as much attention to years ago, and that's really kind of driven by, at least for the companies I've been in, the brands I mentioned earlier, like Atleo, SuccessFactors, or HireVue, what have you, Smashfly. I think, you know, as you look at the market and try to say, hey, we have investors, we have board members, venture capitalists, whatever, and then certainly for your founder, your employer, first and foremost, right? I better mention that. But you've really got to dig into the data. So, again, it's getting into, you know, What's the length of a cycle of a relationship, and what's the conversion rate? And, you know, you start to look at prospects and different things that come from events. There's just droves of data anymore that you can really kind of look at, and it's a required element. So for me personally, it's the thing I just probably don't enjoy doing very well. I tend to hire someone next to me, which I've had fantastic people that can put that into outputs that really give you a vision to your business, and that's another hot spot for me, which is metrics and certainly why I joined the current group I'm with and visibility into that. But I think, you know, this will sound stereotypical, but it is the truth. I love probably going to events. I think certainly still I'll tip my cards all the way. I'm over 50. It never gets old. I was just out at the ERE Recruiting Innovation Summit, and, you know, I think meeting people there, seeing brand new technologies come into play and watching people react, and testing that with people and asking them questions about it, certainly my favorite. And then probably, you know, lastly, being able to train, teach, and educate people. That's always been a joy of mine. I find that fun to do internally with your own staff, and certainly with the technologies that are available today, doing it on the outside with clients and in group settings, what have you.
You've been in a lot of these types of conversations where companies are trying to figure out, how do we go direct or should we go channel? Like, mm-hmm. you're looking at the strategy, you're trying to reach as many people and hit the number and all that other stuff. and deciding, okay, what can we do through channel, through partners, and indirect, if you will, and what should we do through direct? How do you give insight, or how do companies make that decision in a most appropriate way?
Great question. That's you know, probably been a little bit of a conundrum for, you know, throughout the history of man and selling. I think it's a tough one to solve, but I'll tell you some various things to think through as you're trying to make that decision. I think one, in today's day and age, and I kind of put this into the last 10 years, what have you, I think you really have to look at the evolution of the technology you're offering. I won't get into naming names, but I think, you know, I've certainly seen channel attempts with past brands really early. And what's interesting is the actual technology can look very attractive. It can look like, again, sales terminology here, so, you know, beware, but like kind of like the tip of the spear. It's very leading innovation, and it looks like this just, you know, kind of like walks out the door and is a service that would, quote unquote, almost sell itself. And many times that's not the case. And I think what has changed in the HR marketplace specifically is there are nuances that you're really required to know about the discipline, about workflow, about change management, about adoption, about the business value and the ROI, that you know, return on investment, that has to be ever so prevalent. Otherwise, it's just not gonna arrive at a level of success. And I think sometimes that's the hardest for a channel group, because they're evolving and maturing at a little bit slower rate than your direct sales team is. So I'll tell you probably that my biggest belief is that tends to rely on the maturity of the product, the maturity of the marketplace. So whether you're kind of like, you know, being pulled into the market, which is ideal, where someone says, hey, I see what you have and I want to pull that in, or I want that here for us. And I've, off of the brands I've mentioned, I've certainly seen that. Or you can get the reverse of that, which is you're still trying, the market's in a push and you're still trying to, you know, go out, position and offer a service that, you know, it does take a little bit of an open mindset to try and a willingness to work at it. So I think that's where channel and direct kind of come back in: market maturity, market readiness, and so on.
Nice. Hey, everybody. Scott, we're going to do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, Brian and William talking with Scott Fowle. So I'm kind of going to go to the other side of the equation here. So where do you see potentially good, like naturally talented salespeople, like just go off the rails and just not come back and fail?
I don't want to get a whole lot of nasty grams here, so I'm gonna I'll try to be as direct as I can. If there's a couple folks from, you know, the sales fabric listening, but I think where you can really go off the rails is where you become probably so self-centric and so self-absorbed that your brand, your offering, I mean, as I said before, it solves every world, you know, curse, what have you, and you're really kind of not mindful of what your core audience has to go through to evaluate a system or a solution, what they really have to go through to evangelize and message and position to an internal team of folks doing a diligence and people that, you know, ultimately become your user community. And again, that goes back into change management and other elements of a complete holistic rollout. And so I think going off the rails always starts with you become a little bit self-absorbed or egocentric and forgetting that there's some sensitivities on the other side of the fence in terms of, you know, what you have and what you offer may not be the greatest thing since sliced bread on any one given day for any one particular prospective organization or buyer. And I think that's where people just lose sight of the fact that then they've given themselves the right to run away from relationships, not earn trust, and certainly not dig in and really understand what are the business needs. And so that stuff just makes my stomach turn. That's what gives our particular group of folks at an industry organization event or what have you, that's what really gives us a bad name.
How should we interact with salespeople? So let me give you a little bit of the backstory. Like, I always used to get frustrated when people would hide the budget from me. You know, it's just like, we don't know how much it costs. Well, okay, it's either soft money or hard money. If it's hard money, you've got a budget. I'll try to. If I can't be inside your budget, then I can't be inside your budget. But don't hide it from me. Just tell me what the budget is. If it's soft money, well, then we need to build a business case, do cost-benefit analysis, and I'll help you build basically the number, and I'll work with you. We'll collaborate. Mm-hmm. So that's just my own limited experience. How should we interact with great salespeople?
I think, you know, first I would, you know, I probably would make sure that you built a covenant with that person. I think in today's day and age, it's just we're all running towards tons of meetings and daily requirements that, you know, have been given to us or laid on our plate by somebody else, and you've got your employer to kind of please, you've got third parties you're working with, or you know, matrix relationships, and your day's filled instantly. And I think a lot of times what that creates is probably people running and gunning at so many things that sometimes qualitative measures and extra personal attempts at communication get missed, get lost, get ignored. And so I think first and foremost to the question of how to work with your with a salesperson is build a covenant, right? Like set some ground rules and set some expectations around, you know, what you expect from them. And if something's being stated that is certainly, you know, a little bit more confidential in nature, I think state that and be open. And I think today, back to a couple other elements I just mentioned, there's so little time that sometimes there's maybe, you know, it's not even that people are withholding information. There just isn't time to give all the information, but I think be open to maybe some of the questions or the need to know that a salesperson has, because quite frankly, I don't think all of those qualifications are to get the dirty, like, you know, data or intelligence that puts someone in harm's way from a, you know, spend standpoint or kind of a sales, hardcore sales qualification. I mean, a lot of times I'd look at that in reverse in ways in which that more openness and more communication around what you said, William, around a budget could actually save you some time. Because I think today people are certainly saying, hey, look at, I do, I don't know if everybody does this, but I'll tell anybody that I come into an interface or interaction with at a conference is, look, I mean, you know, let's talk about budget for a minute, and here's where I'm going. If you don't have one or there's no way to get one and you don't see enough value, it's not within me to keep bothering or pestering you, because hopefully I'm with an employer or a service provider where it's a hot technology or offering, and I don't want to waste their time, and I certainly don't want to waste mine given the attractiveness of some of the brands I've been with. So I think being open and set a covenant so that there's some ground rules versus just making assumptions. So that might have been long. That's certainly within play.
You know, I networked with a guy back in the 90s, and he sold copy services or reproduction services, I'm trying to think, it's R.R. Donnelly, to lawyers. So basically, he serviced the legal community, right? But his bit was, I'll tell you what, he did a lot of IPOs. They have, I don't know if y'all been to those types of things, but they have a pretty good layout. Anyhow, lawyers were his audience. And he had everybody in a database that he worked with or that he was selling to, and he had everyone's anniversary date. So his bit, well, he had everybody's anniversary date. He called once a year, got confirmation, and you know, and made sure that people were still married and whatnot. But a week before their anniversary, he sent them an Hermes tie. And his whole bit was reminding them that they had an anniversary coming up. So he would send them a card. No, I can't make this stuff up. He said, he'd send them this fantastic tie, really expensive, gorgeous tie, and just, hey, Bob, you know, enjoy your anniversary next week. Really look forward to doing work with you next year, blah, 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 his whole bit, right? So, and that was it. Look, all of these people would thank him essentially for reminding him that basically they had an anniversary that next week. Brian, do you have something?
Yeah, I've actually got a friend in Atlanta, wealth asset guy, right? Been doing it forever, Merrill Lynch. He did exactly the same. Actually built technology to help do that for his entire team. Same deal, where he would reach out to people on like some of those critical ones, like, you know, kids' birthdays, anniversary, like, hey, just a reminder, because I know you're busy building your wealth type thing, right? And same deal. They just loved him. He would tee that up every time. And so, but anyway, that's it's one of those tools out of necessity. It's funny that you say that. I haven't thought about that in years. So anyway,
dude,
good
works.
Stuff.
It works. Scott, what works with our audience, or what have you seen as great, you know, great follow-up and follow-through with the people that you work with?
Yeah. For me, this is, again, what works when you ask that question. I'm going to say what works for me. Traditionally, I have, being in this space and being near talent development, you know, in talent acquisition, what have you, HR, I think most organizations are always on the lookout for good people. And, you know, I think they figure, hey, you're running across a lot of people. And I always try to tell folks that, you know, if you've got
Hey, Brian.
Hey, William.
I think Scott dropped off. So
well,
it's just you and me, man. All
right. Hey.
Well, hey, you know what? This was a good show.
It was great. We need to do more of that. He was a good guest.
We do.
He's
back. Yeah, I'll tell you. Oh, there it is.
Rock, paper, scissors. Let him back in. Let's get him back on.
Yeah, yeah.
I can jump right back and I'll go short here, William. I think they're looking for people. They typically would like help. They figure you have networks or intersections with folks. And I always tell people, if I can help you in your business in any way, let me know. So it's interesting how that manifests itself to phone calls later down the road, which is, hey, confidentially, I'm considering making a move and I need a reference and or here's a couple groups I'm looking at. You know, do you have information? Can you help me? Give me some heads up. And so I think that's a way in which you can always help people within the discipline. And that's probably one of the truest testimonies to, you know, was there trust and was there a relationship when folks open up at that level. So I always try to help more on the side of the business versus, you know, coming up with something that is maybe aligned or tied to a personal motivation. And that's just my own personal belief system in terms of what's helpful and material to someone in a business relationship.
Nice, Scott. We got about 2.5 minutes. Probably my last question, and then we'll figure out where you guys are going to be over the next couple months here, is what's the one thing that you can tell practitioners out there to make sure and ask whoever their sales, business development, relationship person is, what can they ask them to make sure and do for you, the practitioner?
Wow, yeah. I would say, boy, make sure you understand my business and that you've had enough time, and I know this might sound like reverse psychology self-serving, but, I mean, make sure you understand my business well enough that you can really stand in front of me, my team, my employment brand, and then senior leaders to recommend your product or your service or your offering. And I think that's probably big. I could give you reasons why, but I think that's probably one of the best suggestions I could give, no doubt.
Okay, well, that's great. That's I hope everybody takes that to heart. That just makes the world a better place. So, where all are you going to be at next few months? We got about 90 seconds.
Sure. So for Smashfly specifically, where we're going to be, I'll just end with kind of my current assignment. I think we see recruitment marketing platforms really coming into play. There's been a vast number of point solutions that are certainly in the market. What excited me about this was I think there's certainly nothing wrong with point solutions, and there's some amazing functionality out there, but probably lack of integration, you know, the absence of complete visibility into the budget, the fact that technology just keeps evolving and your core candidate audience is probably getting more and more sophisticated as time goes on, you know, compels us to really kind of get in a position to get out in front of that. And I think a recruitment marketing platform is probably the best way to kind of gain control, visibility, and a way in which you can really manage your entire recruitment strategy best. So at Smashfly, we probably like to look at ourselves as, you know, it's where recruitment meets marketing. So that's what I'm excited about. I see that as the next challenge. And over the next couple of years, and specifically months, I look for the market to really continue to grow as several of our large Fortune 500 clients are coming online now and realizing a much better optic to their business and to their ability to kind of manage and produce better business results.
Well, that is perfect. Scott, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Great show. We appreciate the perspective. I hope you'll come back on with us, and you have a good long weekend. Folks, have a good weekend. Go hard. Be safe. Love the people around you. We're out of here.
With music.
With music. But you know what? I think we might have to sing. We'll close this out. It'll get real quick. Let's try a different one. We'll do a little mix here. That's broke. Damn. If I had the lyrics, dude, I'm about there. I've pushed that down.
Come on. Something that I used to know. Come on, give me all you gotta do is have a
that I used to know. God, it's not quite, I thought I'd work my way past it. We're out of here, folks. I can't do it. See you later.